try this again. This is Erin Kay, CEO and founder of Claiming Disability Incorporated. If you're not familiar with Claiming Disability Incorporated, we are an organization that works to educate, advocate, and empower for people with disabilities. Today, I have a very special guest joining me, Jessica Carson. She just popped into the room. And we're going to have a great discussion today. She is an Amazon author, a certified Amazon author, and an official TED Talk speaker. So I have already talked to her. She is really great. I just really wanted you to come on the show today because you have a really unique insight on how you see disabilities. For the first time, sorry, somebody just tried to call me because that's the kind of day it is today. You just have like a really unique insight that you actually believe having a disability in the workplace is an asset as opposed to a negative thing. So why don't you tell our folks a little bit about yourself and how you became so awesome. She's only 30 years old, guys, and she's already done a TED Talk, and she's an author, a published author on Amazon. Please buy a copy of her book. I need to still do that. I need to read it because it's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Wow, that is absolutely my favorite introduction I've ever gotten. Where to begin? So in terms of why is the disability the way? Why is the neurodiversity the way? Why is the scarlet letter or the shadow or those dark aspects of ourselves that we're so quick to hide or shame or cover up or want to fix or want to cure or want to exercise ourselves of? So often that is the very reason we are creating rather than we're creating despite that reason. And there are a multitude of reasons for this, but whether it's genetics or it's the fact that that difference gives us a unique lens on life, a unique lens on our work, a unique way of engaging in the world. But ultimately, in order to be a powerful creator, in order to be innovative, in order to be open to experience and at the world in novel and complex ways, we must have novel and complex wiring. And so I've been sort of subtly aware of this for much of my life because I've always felt that I was wired I thought I was wired in kind of a bad way or a broken way, or I felt like I was wired differently than anyone else. So, you know, so sensitive and so aware of what was happening around me and so, you know, felt like I was really good at some things and then really bad at some things that other people seem to be really good at. And so for so long, I really struggled with accepting this way that I was wired. And I really felt that in order to be successful, I had to create despite the way that I was wired. And then when I started working, because my background is in psychology and neuroscience, but then when I started working in venture capital and startups, so I was surrounded by creators, I began to realize for the first time that really people who are self-selecting into creative and entrepreneurial work are wired uniquely. And to be clear, I don't only mean entrepreneurs, I mean people who are self-selecting into lives and careers that they're truly creating their own destiny. They're carving out their own path. And that, you know, I was seeing these, you know, unique ways that they were wired, whether that was with a mental health issue, or they were neurodiverse in some way, or they had some kind of past trauma, or they had, you know, some kind of difference that catapulted them, that catalyzed that creative spark, and that they were better, stronger, more productive, more creative, more innovative beings because of it. And I'm happy to go into, you know, sort of a range of ways that that's the case. But that was really sort of the impetus to starting this work and writing Wired This Way was, you know, really, it's not even about destigmatizing the things about us that we view as dark or bad or broken. It's actually much different than destigmatizing. It's about actually celebrating those things, that the disability is the way. It's that like path clear that enables us to really march to the beat of our own drum, or to have the courage to go down a path, or to be able to even see the path that others don't see. Because in order to create something truly great, you have to be able to combine inputs in a way that nobody else can. Or at least no one else can and is able to, and is, you know, really kind of willing to do that. So for those who have that unique and diverse and novel perspective, those are the ultimate creators.
Exactly. And there's so many, like, guys, and I see you popping in here, and we are going to take some questions, but there's so many people, particularly in the disabled community, we're unique. We have unique perspectives on how we, you know, navigate the world. I take the bus. I'm disabled as fuck. Like, I'm just like, you know, I have chronic pain every day when I wake up, and that creates a different perspective as opposed to somebody who does not. It creates a lot of empathy. And there's, for me, like, I know I met you at like an employment webinar thing, but like, you're speaking to me so much, because as a business owner who's only been doing this for like a year, I just, there's so many people who are like, what's wrong with you? Like, because I used to work in nonprofit, and I worked in education, and I did very traditional things. Now I'm like, podcasts and doing lives and stuff like that. And I'm like, but in order to be different in this world, you have to be willing to do different things. And it, for me, guys, you should see her resume. She used to be a director with the American Psychological Association. I used to work for NAMI. Like, she is legit. But I was interested because, you know, you have such an impeccable resume. Georgetown University, you know, the APA, and all these things. But, like, you're so non-traditional, because when I approach academia, it's like, you have to take this path. And this is the way it should be. And you can't take any other path. But if you do, that's pretty weird, right? So how do you do that? Like,
you're speaking right to my soul, because honestly, it hasn't always been easy for me to feel okay about being non-traditional and unconventional, because you're right, you know, as someone who, you know, when I started out, I was working at the National Institutes of Health. It doesn't get more sort of prestigious than that.
Girl, your resume is top-notch.
That's not necessarily a great thing, because what comes with that is this pressure to, you know, to do things a certain way and to present yourself in a certain way. And frankly, I think it's agitating to people in general when people like us are so ready and willing to embrace doing things a different way, and not just a different way, but really to celebrate those parts of ourselves that others are not eager to celebrate us for always. And right. That level of self-acceptance that really you embody in spades, it triggers people, because it indicates and it highlights sort of a lack of acceptance in themselves. And so this type
Girl.
Of inevitably, yeah, get, you know, sort of incite sort of distaste in others. And I think a great example of that, and this is something that I'm still sort of processing. I, as you noted, I recently did a TED Talk, my TED Talk or TEDx.
Dude, it's so legit.
But dot, dot, dot. So, and I did it based on my book, which has 200 citations, heavily sort, you know, lots of resources, citations in the book. Everything that I discuss is rooted in research, but I take a more unconventional way of explaining it in terms of, you know, using these metaphors of light and dark in the hero's journey. And I actually had a flag put on my TED Talk that said, you know, that essentially research doesn't support the claims between sort of creativity and mental health and all of these different things. And frankly, well, and so it's interesting, right? Because that's just, it's a sign of anyone who's looking to carry this work and this message forward in an unconventional way has to expect that it's not the people who receive it. It is, you are going to give them a gift like no other gift someone has given them. But to the people who are not ready to hear it, it is going to trigger them because it is unconventional, as you say. And
oh my God. Like, I feel like people with disabilities, like, our entire being is that of unconventional. The reason why I liked you so much during that presentation, again, it's like you're the first person that I've come across that's like, disability is a good thing. Mental illness is a good thing. Like, because even working in those nonprofit sectors, it's not framed as a good thing. It's framed as something that needs to be cured, as something that to be, I mean, yes, we need to talk about it, but it's like, it's not always framed in this positive light, which I don't understand. And people, I definitely understand that because people get very angry sometimes when I use the word disabled, and it's because of the connotations that we attach to the word disabled. The word disabled is not inherently bad. Having a disability is not bad. It's the negative connotations that we give those words. That's why it's so important to flip the script.
Like, and to be clear, yeah. And I'll give a few examples of the ways in which mental health issues for creators, it is the mechanism through which they are self-selecting into creative and entrepreneurial work. So it's not to say that, you know, if you have depression or anxiety or addiction, you shouldn't seek support for it, because you absolutely should. What I believe needs to shift is this idea that we need to completely rid ourselves of all of these, you know, these demons, because we're somehow less than whole or we're somehow less than perfect. Whereas in reality, so I'll give some examples. So depression. Depression is far more common in creators than non-creators, specifically entrepreneurs and non-entrepreneurs. However, the reason that depression has survived our ancestral lineage, it hasn't been weeded out evolutionarily speaking, is because it does or can confer an adaptive advantage onto the individual who has it. So what I mean by that is individuals with depression are capable of slowing down their energy, withdrawing from the world, and channeling their focus on a problem of their choosing and sort of ruminating on it until they solve it. And so this kind of tendency is often required for individuals who want to write books or start companies or, you know, create poetry or songs or whatever it is. Somebody with addiction, so that's that implicates the dopaminergic system, which is the neurotransmitter that we talk about when we think of reward and novelty seeking and sensation seeking. And so individuals who are wired for addiction are also going to be wired to have a high risk tolerance and a high threshold for arousal, and they're going to want to seek out a diversity of experiences and inputs and connections, and they're going to have more of this stomach to tolerate the rocky road of new venture creation than someone who's not wired in this way. Or, you know, someone who's, and this one is one of my favorites. So there's a theory that can be, you can look it up. It's called hyperbrain, hyperbody theory of integration. And basically what it states is that people with higher IQs are more prone to physiological and psychological illness. And the reason for this is because they have these nervous systems that are highly, highly sensitive, highly permeable nervous systems. So basically, they're noticing everything, they're feeling everything, they're sensing everything, they're connecting the dots, they're seeing the patterns, they're noticing the trends. And this state of sensitivity, this state of awareness, allows them to create in an incredibly powerful way. The downside of this, though, is that your nervous system is so on all the time that what to others is a hum seems to you like a chainsaw, or like what to someone else is like, you know, a breeze feels like claws, or, and so the nervous system just gets worn down. And so would someone with a high IQ say, well, I want to cure myself of this superhuman ability to notice everything? That is the very reason that I can do the work that I do. Well, I think most wouldn't want that, right? Because that's sort of taking, that stripping them of their superpower. What many people, and so I consider myself to be one of these people with a super sensitive nervous system. What you do want is you do want ways to regulate it. You do want ways to harness it. You do want ways of not constantly being in this depleted state. But if I could choose to not have this hypersensitive nervous system, I'd take it any day, because it is the reason I create. And so this can be, this sort of framework can be, and I could go on and on and on with different examples of all of the different ways, you know, whether it's autism or it's ADHD or it's any of these, that the disability or the neurodiversity creates that path for novel creation. Now, for someone with a physical disability, you know, perhaps it's that, you know, it's giving them a lens on life or a view of life or an experience or you know, whether that's a good experience or that's trauma, that is informing them in a very unique and novel way. They are experiencing and going through life in a way that not, you know, is not common. And so that ultimately will give them a perspective that is not common. And that not commonness has the seeds of brilliance. And so it's about not smothering, not shaming, not for, you know, and our creative and entrepreneurial culture is so effed up in so many ways, where we all have to look same and present ourselves the same, and we have to keep calm and carry on, and we have to hustle and we have to crush it. And then it's like, you know, I loved your post today, because it's like, okay, you have to use a ring light in order to look good. And now it's like Gary Vee saying, don't use a ring light because that's superficial. And it's like, what are we being told to do? You know, and it's just all of this exterior noise that is telling us that there is a way to create, that is ignoring the most powerful thing that we as creators bring to the table, which is our own unique lived experience. And so the fact that that is not being fully channeled and fully harnessed is like nothing short of devastating. Because it's like, and then we wonder why we live in a world full of like crappy products that are hurting the environment, that are oftentimes hurting the end consumers psychologically or physically. And it's, you know, you can't help but wonder if everyone really was channeling their fullest, wholest expression of themselves into their creations, would we have a world of better creations? And the answer to that is probably yeah.
I love listening to you talk because you're so much smarter than me. Right, and the way that you speak and the way that you carry yourself, that you're not all like, there's so much fear around living an authentic life. And I work with a lot of different entrepreneurs, and hello Elizabeth, I do see you this way. Thank you for having it. But like, there's so many entrepreneurs, there's literally a fear because they're like, how are you doing what you're doing? You know, how has your company grown so much? And I'm like, the only thing I can muster is that any content that I put out is just shit I believe in. Like, the thing that I created yesterday with that cutie little girl, April, and I'm like, I saw that girl, and I was like, she was good me at that age. Like, but I didn't have Instagram influencers. I didn't have people to look up to because I'm older, you know, and that's just the way of it. But now there's all these kids that are like modeling and feeling comfortable in their skin, and like the world is going to try to beat that out of you. They're going to try to make you conform to some ideal that isn't even real.
Yeah,
so, like, it's like keep that part of you. That's so unique, and I feel like with internalized ableism, disabled people go through this process, right, where they're like, I'm not disabled, I just want to be normal, I just want to fit in, and then you realize we're trying to navigate a world that isn't made for us anyway, so it's like once we embrace our identities, I at least feel like things get a lot easier. But maybe not, you know, and it's late. It's not a linear journey where you're like, oh my God, I feel okay now. You know, it's life, it's a process, but why are we, and disability isn't ugly, I don't think it's ugly, but some people might perceive it as ugly.
Yeah.
But why are we so like, sometimes people are like, having a disability is worse, you know, than death. Like, I've literally been told that, and I'm just like,
oh, the shame, the scarlet letters. Oh, it's so, but isn't it so, when someone says something like that, a part of you has to just love them to pieces, because the shame that they must carry around to have that perspective, that having a disability is worse than dying.
From
such a broken place, right? Or such a place that's lacking wholeness and needs some like love and some sugar and some butter poured over it, because that's a statement that's filled with a lot of hurt that's directed towards themselves. And, you know, Erin, what I hear you saying is like, so one of my favorite quotes, by Carl Rogers, that's one of my like life mantras, is what is most personal is most universal. So said differently, those things about ourselves that we think are the most like ugly or shameful or weird, or we just assume that no one else could possibly feel or think the way we feel or think, those are actually the little nuggets that are going to resonate the most. And so what I love so much about your social media presence, and the reason that it strikes me as so ultimately authentic, is because you're taking these just like mundane things that are so, but they're so true to you, and you're gifting it to others in a way that makes others feel so seen. And it's taking that mundane moment of feeling pretty or not feeling pretty, or feeling healthy or not feeling healthy, and turning it into this moment of resonance where everyone's like, yeah, I know. Like, I know, I've been there. And I think the important thing that like we keep circling back to in all of our conversations is just this idea that like authenticity and what it means to be an authentic creator, that concept of authenticity can at times F us up if we think about it too deliberately, right? Right. Because, you know, so it's like, you know, the example that we were talking about before this call is like, now the authentic thing to do is to not use a filter and to not use a ring light. But what if it makes you happy to use a ring light? Because it makes you happy to see yourself looking bright.
Yes.
You're not authentic? Or, you know, we were also talking about, so I like, you know, every day of this quarantine, I've been putting on lipstick. I live with my cat. Most days I don't see anyone. I do it because it makes me feel good. Now people can say, well, it's not authentic that she's like always posing in makeup. You could think that, but actually me embracing my femininity, that is the most authentic expression of myself. And actually when I was working in venture capital, I totally, you know, I tossed out every feminine aspect of myself, literally and metaphorically, because that's what I thought that I needed to do to be an authentic creator. So I got like, you know, the smart flats and the black turtlenecks and, you know, did the whole song and dance and made myself look all nice and impressive and made myself sick in the process because I wasn't ultimately being what was authentic to me, which is going to be something that's not authentic to someone else. Because if you see someone else with a bow in their hair with lipstick on, they may be doing that from a place of disempowerment. But for me, it's coming from a place of empowerment. And so it's just the conversation around authenticity, I think, has become so like normalized that it's like lost its potency because we're getting confused about authenticity isn't doing the least popular thing just because it's a trend to do the least popular thing or the most popular thing. So I just loved your post about the ring light and the filter and the makeup and everything. Because yeah, if that's what makes you feel good and authentic, do it.
It makes us feel good. Like I was saying, guys, when I come on, yeah, sometimes somebody even told me that one. It's like you don't even look like yourself, you know, you don't even look like that person. It's very hurtful. But anyway, you know, that's the thing, like we have moments, right, where you know we want to have makeup, we want to do our hair, we wanna like have a ring light and we wanna look pretty and you know, she looks gorgeous. Jessica looks gorgeous with her lipstick and her, you know, her headbow and stuff like that. And it's like, in her Christmas tree, like, we should be celebrating however people want to be in that authenticity. Yes, I think people get majorly confused, myself included, like, as a business owner. I'm like, I'm sitting here, I'm like, oh, maybe I should hop on, you know, and say something. But if I'm not in a good mental space, if I'm not in a place where I'm going to say something positive or, you know, and there's space for that too. We don't, hey, Project Fairy, girl, I love your videos. Talk about authenticity. This girl, oh my goodness sake, she, her videos are amazing. Love seeing them. And again, like, she listens to Gary Vee. I listen to Gary Vee, but even Gary Vee is like, some of the stuff that I say isn't always applicable to you or your situation. So, you know, earlier I was like, I just want to like post a video of me walking with my dog. Now I'm like sitting by a ring light with lots of makeup and because I like to do that stuff. And that's okay to like that stuff. If that's how you feel like your most powerful self, it only becomes like, I'm sure Jessica has these experiences too, but it only becomes when people are like, oh my god, you look so tired today, or you know, which is like the worst like it's just like, hey, I just decided not to put a bunch of makeup on. Okay? Like, can I just have a moment of me looking like me for a sec?
Yeah. And I think that is also part of what I've had to, as a recovering perfectionist, come to realize and accept is that there is space for you to be multiple versions of yourself, depending on what feels most centered to you in that moment. Because, you know, there are going to be some days where, yeah, it's like, let's go full lipstick and sassy outfit, and then there are going to be some days that, you know, it's obviously it's bun and yoga pants, and both are an authentic expression of me. And so, you know, we get so into this notion of like having a persona that's like easily digestible and is very consistent, and then when we present with different personas, oftentimes we disquiet people because we're disrupting that sense of continuity that they have around our who we are to them. But I think that we need to lean into that more, that idea of, you know, it's okay to present different faces, different versions of yourself on a given day, as long as that's that version of yourself on that day is the most authentic version of yourself that you can be sharing, you know. And it's like the Walt Whitman quote, do I contradict myself? Very well, then I contradict myself. I am large multitudes. And it's like, we contain multitudes. So like, why do we have to have this like perfect little neat, tidy persona, you know? But I will be very curious and eager to see how this pandemic and this time working from home shifts the culture of the entrepreneurial and creative ecosystem. You know, because a year ago, we'd be at a, you know, a networking event, or we'd be at some pitch off or some whatever cocktail party, something. And, you know, there was more posturing involved when we were all in the same offices or we were going to the same events. And I think that this space is giving people more of an opportunity to really explore with who they would be if no one was watching. I know that's been a really cool exercise for myself, because I'm like, wow, actually the version of myself that I would be if no one was watching, I really like this version of myself, but it's not really a version of myself that I even had time or space to explore prior to this. So I'm really cool to see what kind of authenticity will emerge on the other side of this.
In the spirit of authenticity and not, but it comes off.
You know, Erin, I can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. It comes off as very, right? I feel like, and especially you say you're a recovering perfectionist. I want to be that as well, because I'm also a perfectionist. Yeah. But I have to really let go of my content and be like, all right, you know, it doesn't look perfect or it's not the perfect thing, but I'm just going to do it. A lot of times with these interviews, they get messed up in terms of content and they don't look perfect. And I'm like, it could have looked better or something like that. Like, how do I combat that? And just, again, guys, I'm giving you advice to not, you know, cater to other people's judgment. But I'm still dealing with that myself as somebody who's doing something different from the norm, because I worked in nonprofit for a really long time. So to people on the outside, they're like, whoa, she's really lost it. Like, no, she's just like sitting in the bathroom doing videos, like talking about all this goofy stuff, taking a picture in her bra, like, what the heck is happening over there? Like, you know, I'm just like, how do I explain. It's just, I want to be free from all of those things that I felt weighted me down for so long. I felt like I had to have the perfect job, the perfect life, the perfect marriage. Like, it just feels so overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. So it's interesting because this year I have felt the most, more empowered than I ever have to present the most authentic version of myself. And that's, it's something that's, you know, we all blossom, you know, and learn new sort of aspects of ourselves as we evolve. But what's interesting is that I've also, to your point of people are like, what's she doing? Or like, is she losing it? Or is she okay? Like, it's funny to me.
It's like, are you all right? Like, I'm like, I mean, I'm not sure sometimes. But then I meet people like you and I'm like, okay, I know I'm on the right path. There's people out here like this. It's just not common and it makes me nervous. Like,
but this goes back to the triggering because so this year, as I've been, I mean, it's been a few years of progression, but this year in particular, as I've been presenting my most authentic self, I have been called inauthentic. I've been called superficial. I've been called dark. I've been called like she's losing it. She's, you know, and so it's just, when we are standing in our capital T truth, that is going to trigger others. And they're going to project that often by accusing you of being inauthentic when actually it's the opposite. And so then it, you know, but it could do tricks on, you know, it could do tricks with your mind in terms of, you know, when you're feeling like your most authentic self and then that's being perceived by someone as, well, this authentic version of her is, this is somehow like manipulative or this is crafted or this is like, you know, yeah, like she's putting on a role or she's, you know, playing out a storyline or something. It's, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to take that personally. It's literally a, you know, personal insult, but it's also, I think, an opportunity to keep leaning into that capital T truth, even when, you know, others don't like it. Because that's, I mean, that's ultimately what you have, like, that is what it takes to be a great creator, right? We can't, and it's very easy to listen to all of the voices these days. But I think if people think you're losing it, I think that's probably a sign you're doing something right.
You have no idea how much that means, because it's just like, sometimes you're just like, you get these messages and you're like, wow, people went out of their way because they felt like really hurtful. Like, it's just like, you know, and people like Gary Vee and Mel Robbins, they're like, that's a compliment, you know, but as we're out here and you're really, I mean, you're doing what I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to write a book. I've always wanted to, like, do that. And I just, how do you, there's a lot of people who are going, like, how do you do this stuff? And I'm like, when you, so you have mental, or anyone else, I just assume, but I mean, I have depression and anxiety and cerebral palsy, and I don't know about you, and I don't know if you feel comfortable talking about that, but how do we fight these, I don't know, demons, I guess? Like, you're saying demons, like, when we have, like, we want to create, I almost create like manically. I don't know about you, but it can almost be harmful because I'm so manic and I don't really see the impact like I need to. Like, when I'm like, okay, take a step back, slow down, like, doing cool stuff, like, appreciate it. You know, how do we kind of just, how do we stop those negative voices that stop us from being our true selves and putting out content? It's a big question, I know.
Well, it's a great question. has a lot of layers, but okay. So I'll start with, so I cannot and should not tell anybody how to tackle their demons in terms of treating or curing a mental illness. However, what I will say is that so much of the demon of that struggle is our own non-acceptance of it, is our own resistance to it and friction with it. And so if nothing else, what Wired This Way and what my work, what I hope it accomplishes is that it takes that diagnosis, which, because frankly, even if, you know, you kind of cure yourself of your depression, you're really never going to get, like, you're never going to get rid of that disposition. And that's always going to kind of be there. But what you can do is you can put this like nice warm blanket around it, where, and that blanket is the blanket of acceptance. Because once we stop fighting with those things, and once we stop putting these really bad stories around them, we can, they lose so much of their power almost immediately. You know, one of a multitude of sort of diagnoses, so depression is one of my labels. Fortunately, it's not super extreme, but it's something that's been common throughout my life. Because I'm able to see how that predisposition for depression is so directly related to the way I create, what I create, how I create it, the way that I obtain and process the insights that I'm creating with, when I feel that morning where you wake up and you're like, oh, it's here, you know, like that kind of low feeling is here, instead of going right to a place of judgment and God, I'm so messed up and blah, 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 you say, oh, I'm going to be in that kind of like poetic, angsty place for the next few days. Let's use that. Because actually, I tend to actually, you know, be most creative in terms of like writing poetry, writing in general, processing things in deep and complex ways when I'm in those lower periods. So instead of then fighting with it, which then prolongs it and deepens the hurt, you just kind of put a blanket around it. You say, okay, I see you, but I also see what we can create together. It just mitigates the impact of the demon, so to speak. You had another part to your question, but did that answer part of it?
Yeah, right. I fight with that all the time, because being a person who has depression and anxiety, I always have depression and anxiety, and I almost beat myself up. I'm like, why am I depressed? Like, I have a loving husband, I have a great life, like, I have all these things, and I practice gratitude and all that stuff, but yet I'm still depressed. And I'm like, but it's not, you know, anything personal. I just have depression. But I almost want to, like, fight with it and be like, come on, you shouldn't be depressed. You have a business, and yeah, you're doing things, and you're helping people. But yet the depression still kind of sits in the background, and I almost want to, like, ignore it, but... like you said, by ignoring it, we're almost doing ourselves a disservice, because
we're not.
The reason exists is there. You know?
Yes, and the way that I've come to think about all of these things, whether it's a mental health diagnosis or it's a physical disability or it's just it's a disposition or it's a trauma or sort of negative experience. The way that I choose to view it, and maybe this is incredibly naive, but it helps me, is that these are all like little gifts of responsibility that we are given by the universe. Like, okay, I feel that you as a soul, as a human, are like, you can take on this responsibility and this responsibility and this responsibility. And so when we say, oh, well, depression happened to me, or I have, you know, like, I'm... we can also view it as, I have all of these really interesting obstacles on my hero's journey of life, right? Like, I have a lot of weird obstacles on my hero's journey of life, you know, whether it's mental health or physical health issues, or, you know, just these like bizarre kind of like weird, bad things that happen to you. And they're like, all of these like tests and trials and temptations along your hero's journey. But then there are also these like responsibilities where it's like, if you choose to take this responsibility, it's like, you can take this struggle, this challenge, and you can really harness it. You can really use it as a gift. You can use it as a source of inspiration. You can use it. And this is, so I don't listen to pop music, but I love Taylor Swift because I'm captivated by her as a person. And by the way that she constantly takes crap that she's given, and she sees the responsibility in it, and she takes it as a part of her hero's journey of life, and she turns it into something else. She turns it into something that will heal, inspire. And it's like, you know, we all are alchemists in this way. We all have this incredible ability to transmute and transform through the process of creation. So when we are able to take those crappy experiences, those crappy emotions, those crappy labels, whatever they are, and we're able to put it through our own medicine, our own brand of magic, and turn it into something else that's useful, that is us accepting that responsibility and turning it into something good. And that is ultimately, I think, what makes a life of meaning. Because what makes a life of meaning is not skirting around. It's not like, you know, getting around the edges of the boulder of depression and like, you know, and just like avoiding all of these obstacles we've been given. It's like taking the obstacle and seeing it and then figuring out our own way that only we can create of like dissolving it or getting over it and then giving that to others. And it's like in doing that, we're constantly unlocking these keys, not only for ourselves, but for the collective. And that's, I think, just the ultimate power of a creator, right? Is to be able to turn obstacles into the way, to turn the disability into the way. I mean, mic drop, like that's the whole thing.
I love the way you talk because it's so unique to you. And I just, like, you're so, I don't know if people tell you this, but you're so down to earth for being somebody who has, like, kind of been in that academic, like, very, you know, I mean, high-ranking place. You know, you're so, like, this is our hero's journey, like that's so like Greek mythology to be like, okay, you know, take these challenges, what we perceive as challenges, but it's actually, you know, like our greatest assets. And if I didn't have a disability, I wouldn't have the perspectives that I have. And so that's why when people are like, you know, ask that random question that everybody asks, it's like, if you could choose not to have a disability, would you choose not to have one? I'm like, absolutely not, because then I would have no idea about disability advocacy or access or inclusion or anything. And that's kind of the disconnect, right, in the disabled community. There's not enough people who realize that you're only temporarily able-bodied. And these issues that we experience in the disabled community will one day possibly become your issue as well. So it's like, and there's such a disconnect with the able-bodied community and the disabled community of like, oh, that doesn't impact me, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, how do we get the crossover? It's really interesting because you think very differently than that kind of governmental, like, nonprofit sector that I've been in.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks this way. You understand you're very unique. Like,
oh, gosh, well, my of down to earthness I have is because I was like Icarus flying with my like wax wings like next to the sun, and I crashed down to earth, had my like, you know, this was, you know, in my younger 20s, had sort of a dark night of the soul, not sort of, it was a dark night of the soul, physical health issues, mental health issues, all because I wasn't down to earth, and because I wasn't my authentic self, and because I was looking at the shiny hot thing in the sky and trying to fly as close to that as I could, not realizing that that was actually the thing that was gonna hurt me and was gonna burn me. And so it's been a long road back down to earth, but it's now I feel really comfy here. But yeah, I mean, in terms of bridging this, you know, so you have disabled, able, you have, well, and that's just what I love so much. Okay, I'm going to go on a little tangent. So,
girl, do it. I'm excited.
Well, so everyone knows the book, The Scarlet Letter. You know, we all had to read it in school. Most of us had to read it in school. And obviously the premise of The Scarlet Letter is that, you know, the main character, Hester, is forced to wear this A, which stands for adulterer, adulteress. And it's supposed to be this big red explicit mark of shame for this thing that she had done. Now, whether that's something you do or it's something, you know, it's the big scarlet letter of D for depression, or it's the big scarlet CP for cerebral palsy, or whatever it is, you know, we all carry around these scarlet letters. But by the end of the story, the A that once stood for adulteress came to mean able. Because Hester, the character, was able to show that she was able. She was able to show that she was, you know, productive and, you know, contributing member of society. And so the meaning of the Scarlet Letter turned into something that was explicitly bad and damning and dark into something that was productive and adaptive and light. And so it's literally, we have the ability to do the same thing with all of our Scarlet Letters. And what I don't think, you know, if you're talking about people who don't have a mental health diagnosis or who are able-bodied, what we all have to realize is that we all have scarlet letters. They're all different, but we all have them. And the interesting thing is, you know, like we all have different, it's like some people think, you know, an eating disorder would be absolutely the worst thing to ever experience. And then some people think that, you know, almost committing suicide would be the worst thing. Or some people think having autism would be the worst thing. Or some people think that having a traumatic experience would be the worst thing. And we're all looking at each other's scarlet letters like, oh my God, imagine if I had that scarlet letter. That would be so awful. But the reality is we all got them. We also all have the ability to turn the adulteress into the able, or the depression into the poeticism, or, you know, the eating disorder into you know, this quest for harmony within your body, and the ability to surrender control. So this is where the labels are interesting to me, because I think that we're all disabled.
It depends on the context, right? Like, if you view disability as a negative thing, I can honestly say if you become disabled in your life, you will find a way to, you know, become whole as a person. You will, you know, there's going to be times where you're like, you know, this is not what I wanted or whatever. You know, in my experience, obviously I've been disabled from birth is different from somebody who got into a car accident and couldn't walk normally and all of that. But it's like changing the narrative, right? Claiming disability, claiming your disability as something positive versus something negative. But there's a lot of, kind of division in the community in terms of if disabled people want to identify with that label or they don't. And for me, embracing my identity has helped me, to be a better creator, to be that person that I've always wanted to be. For me, embracing it has been really helpful. So that's why I'm all about claiming disability, because for me, it changed my life. It changed my perspective. And we all have things that, I guess if you do view disability in a negative context, that people are like, this is so disabling, it could disable you and, make your life really bad, but it also could make it really good. I don't know, are we just speaking ridiculousness now?
I don't think so. And it's not to say it's going to make your life necessarily good or it's going to make your life necessarily easy. But what it does give you is it gives you a life that is your own, that is authentic, that is, because when you're living the life you're supposed to live, that doesn't mean it's always going to be easy. But that means that the relationship that you have with your life is more easeful. Like it's more, you're in more of a state of harmony, like with all aspects of your life. But I am curious, with the word disabled or disability, because we've never actually spoken about before, like how you think about the word. Do you view it as, the word disabled, like there is somehow a lack of ability? Because if the tenets of our conversation are true, that would mean it's almost like pro-abled or something.
I mean, for me, when I talk about this with kids a lot, but I'm going to talk about it again because narratives are similar, right? And so I didn't wake up one day and just feel like disabled and fearsome, like I was going to take on the world. One of those people, like I'm 32 years old, and it took me a long time because I use a walker and I've used a wheelchair and I've used an electric scooter. It took me a long time to be like, I'm okay with myself the way I am. One, because I didn't see enough representation. There wasn't people like me rolling around.
Yeah.
I grew up in high school and I was like, I am the only one here with a disability, when I know that was probably not true. There were probably people with mental illness and various things. I just didn't see anyone who looked like me. So I wanted to be like everyone else. I wanted to, be like my sister who was a cheerleader and was, that kind of stuff. Like I wanted to fit in. And I think everybody goes through that as a disabled person. And that's kind of our internalized ableism, because things aren't accessible, because we don't have that representation in the media. We're like, we don't want to have this disabled label. But then, I grew up with abuse, and my father, he would call me like worthless little cripple and stuff like that. So I always had like a very negative connotation to those words, and I didn't want that association. But then I realized with claiming my disability, calling myself disabled, it's a culture. It's part of the reclaim movement. There's actually a reclaim movement in the disabled community where they were like, we're taking back the word disabled, because people with disabilities and special needs and those kind of terminologies, that was created by an able-bodied culture, a nonprofit culture, not a disabled culture. So that's why I became part of the reclaim movement, because I really felt like I was denying a huge part of myself in my husband's able body. So it's like everybody I spend time with is able bodied. And so I always felt like I stuck out like the sore thumb. And so embracing my disability and my disabled community, I found all these amazing people, you know, who are in this room right now who are like, I have disability too. I have cerebral palsy too. Like, I wear my disability like a badge of honor. And I just think that's amazing because, again, it doesn't have to be a negative word. The connotations that we have surrounding it are negative. But, you know, there's lots of people, Andrew Burza and Alex Darcy, Wheelchair Rapunzel, there's lots of people who are disabled and proud. And that's a movement, you know. And so,
and yeah, there's something empowering about, yeah, like giving it a weight, because these things, they do, you know, they are heavy. And so, I mean, my sort of example of this, and it's not an exact, exactly analogous with yours, but so when I was in college, I had what I now know to be an eating disorder. And it should have been extremely obvious what it was, because I was literally could have died at any moment because of how thin I was. But it was never actually diagnosed. And I was able to kind of, you know, I don't ever think we totally rid ourselves of these things, but heal myself to the extent that I think someone possibly can from an eating disorder really on my own. And it wasn't until years later. And so as a result, like, you know, with my family, it was always sort of, oh, remember that time you lost a bunch of weight? But we never used the word eating disorder because it was never diagnosed. And it was never just, it's a scary term. And it wasn't something that like my family or friends really wanted to use. So we would always like skirt around it. And a few years ago, I started really being very intentional about forcing people to use the term in reference to my experience, including myself. So really calling it what it was, which was a very severe eating disorder. And in claiming that term and in putting that diagnosis on myself that actually hadn't been put on me, you know, by anyone else, but, you know, clearly was what it was, there was a sigh of relief. Like there was a sense of like, I don't want to say belonging, but it felt empowering to call it what it was. And so in that sense, I don't have a physical disability currently, but I could see how claiming that word would provide that sense of like almost ownership.
Well, I'm super proud of you. And so lately in the interviews, we've been talking about disability disorder. And I want to commend you for being so brave and talking about your eating disorder, because there is a lot of fear. And for a long time, I was afraid to call, you know, what I was having an eating disorder because of the connotation, right? Of like, and again, my family too, they're like, oh, you know, that was just that time.
Yeah.
We're really depressed. I'm like, no, Mom, it was something a little more.
Yeah.
But again, it's that fear, but it's weird because it can actually be very empowering. And I think for the disabled community, like when I roll into a room, I'm disabled as hell. Like there's no like, and I love how the able-bodied community, they like to pretend like it's not there. And it's like, we'll say anything but walker or wheelchair. And I'm like,
just don't even look at it. Just pretend like you don't even know.
Pretend it's not there. Yeah. We don't see anything. Like, it's just like, yes, it is. And it's fine.
And don't deny experience. That's, and that truth. Like, don't pretend like it's not there. It's there.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be bad. But again, I think that's just, you know, and like you dealt with your family, just reprogramming, saying, like, hey, I used to work in mental health. Getting a mental health diagnosis can actually be very liberating because you're like, oh, that's why I'm manic and I'm hyper and I'm all this stuff because I have this diagnosis. Like, it doesn't have to be bad.
Yeah.
Like, it can actually be very empowering.
Yeah. 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 And so, in conclusion, it's like there's just whether it's, you know, you're in a wheelchair or you're running a marathon, you're in bed depressed or you're cresting a manic episode, like wherever you are on the spectrum, or like you've lived a perfectly easy, happy life, or you've experienced severe trauma, we all got something. We got a scarlet letter. And it's up to us to not view our scarlet letter as any better, worse, or different, to not give ours more or less weight. It's also up to us to transform it, not suppress it or repress it or deny it or hide it, but to transform it to the most enlightened version that it can be. To turn, you know, the A into the most proactive A that it can be. And when we do that, we really do more than empower ourselves. You know, we really do empower others, and we empower the things that we create, you know, because the essence of who we are goes directly into our creations. And so it's really the responsibility, the onus of every creator to make sure that they are, you know, really fully aware of the operating system that they're working with as they're putting things out into the world. And I think that if that's the one thing that I could share with the world, then I will go to my deathbed very happy.
Please, please, not anytime soon, but I'm just like, please keep talking about this. I will say it's a revolutionary idea. It's a revolutionary book to empower yourself through these things that people perceive as negative. Where can other folks find you?
So you can get why. So you can go to my website. All of my links are on my website. So www.jessicacarson.co. You can also obviously get this on Amazon. So I think it's currently out of the hardcover. So make sure to look for the paperback version.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can also
on some life changing. You know, again, I think just turning what we perceive as negatives into positive is so, I hope that you're like not letting your tech stuff stop you. And I hope you're just going into corporate businesses and organizations and you're thinking, hey, this way of thinking is going to help you and enhance your organization first. Heard it.
Yeah. I am as fired up as I've ever been. So I'm going to keep pushing. And I'm so grateful for you and your work and your love. Like I adore you. So I'm so pleased that we had the opportunity to do this. And I'm such a fan of your incredible work.
I'm a fan of your work. And I'm so happy that people like you exist. Pioneers like you who are out here encouraging these different ways of thinking, because it's important. You're important to the fabric of everything that we keep pushing towards authenticity, but not pushing ourselves so hard where it's like, okay, we don't even know what authentic is anymore. But just,
yes, create your own version of authentic, for the love of God. Don't do what Instagram tells you is authentic, because that's gonna come back to bite you real quick.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank
you. And please, guys, pick up her amazing book for the holidays. I know you're gonna be giving some gift cards. Happy New Year's, or New Year's. Happy
all
deep, deep, I think. I don't know what day it is.
Yes.
We're in quarantine. We're like, what day is it now? Not happy holiday. But you know what, guys? Also, if you're one of those people on the holidays freaking suck, embrace that too. You know what I mean? Like, if it hurts right now, then think about perfect families and all of that stuff, because I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves during the holidays to have these perfect scenarios. You know what? If you don't, that's okay, because I don't either. And that's my truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Cheers to that.
All right. Well, love you guys. Thank you so much for joining, Jessica.
Bye.
Hey guys, I really hope you enjoyed Jessica Carson. I just thought she was amazing. I was so thankful that I had met her at a workshop, and what she said to me about, you know, your psychological wiring and how systems work is so important, I feel like, for the disabled community. I just love what she is all about. I would highly recommend checking out her book, Wired This Way, available on Amazon for purchase. Also, you can stop by our Claiming Disability official merch store, link in bio. Love y'all.